This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
And welcome to the Glenn Beck program. Today, there is something we've prepared for you, and I've been so excited to share this with you. And then, by coincidence, on the front page of the Drudge Report, they're talking about the same thing. Elon Musk and the merging of man and machine, the downloading of you and uploading of the internet into you. It's called transhumanism. And artificial intelligence has been called by Stephen Hawking, Elon Musk, Bill Gates, as the great destroyer of humanity. Not in a casual way, but even the proponents like, what's his name that was the co-founder of Apple? Wozniak. Even Wozniak says, with AI the way it's going to be, people will be the pets of a lamppost. He's not joking about it. He just doesn't have a problem with it. I want to talk about it because the time to decide is right now. And some very important people are warning us that what is coming in the next 5 to 10 years. And you better identify and better decide right now before it's turned on. We begin there right now. I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Elon Musk was having lunch at SpaceX with the guy who is in charge of the pretty secretive and mysterious organization called DeepMind. It was purchased by Google. It's in London. Neither of them live in Silicon Valley, and they are the kings of Silicon Valley and thinking. One of the guy's names is Demis. And I think it's Hassabis. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. But Demis Hassabis and Elon Musk having lunch at SpaceX. And overhead is this giant rocket that is being lifted by a crane. And Musk looks at Demis and says, this is the most important project for all of humankind happening right now. And Demis says, no, it's not. You want to go colonize Mars. I'm working on the most important project for all of humankind, and that is artificial super intelligence. Musk looks at Demis and says, quite frankly, that's why I think we have to go to Mars. We have to colonize. Before you hit artificial intelligence and super intelligence, man has got to be on another planet to escape from your super intelligence. Now think of this. This is movie stuff. This is actually happening between these two guys. Now Musk is he's probably not the leading voice. The leading voice is Stephen Hawking. Stephen Hawking says, this is the end of all human life. And he means it. On the flip side is Demis Hassabis, who is the guy who is leading the charge for DeepMind. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because he's just put $1 billion into a nonprofit to stop or control artificial intelligence. He believes it's that dangerous. He believes that the human race will come to an end because of this. And he's not alone. Bill Gates believes the same thing. This is moving faster than we thought it would. And they're now saying that artificial intelligence is going to happen anywhere between the next 5 years and 20 years. But we're getting close. And in the next 5 to 10 years, you are going to be able to upload and download your intelligence. So the way you think, You'll be able to say, I want to go to France. I want to upload French. And you'll be able to speak French. You're going to have a port in your head within the next 10 years. And you're going to have to decide now whether you want to take it or not. I want to get into what happened at this lunch that nobody is expressing to the people in the rest of the country. They're talking about this in Silicon Valley. You talk to the people in Washington, their eyes glaze over. They have no idea what you're talking about. You talk about this in the media circles, their eyes glaze over. They have no idea what you're talking about. And they also tend to think, well, that's just not going to happen because robots aren't going to take over the earth. Robots are not what you're worried about. And I'll explain why in a second. First, the reason why history is so important is because history shows us how humans act, the pattern of history repeats. Now, it's not the same, but it's the same pattern. And history shows what people try to do, not what they accomplish. For instance, what is ADD medication for? ADHD. What? When school said to your son back in the 90s, Pat, why did they want to put your son on Ritalin?
They wanted him to be calm in school.
Right. Okay. Yeah. They wanted him to behave. So instead of saying, hey, this system is not working because kids have ADHD off the charts now, the medication, so many kids are being medicated. Instead of saying, wait a minute. Maybe the educational system isn't working. Instead, we say, let's give our kids a pill. Bad idea. And here's why. If it was just for ADHD, if that medicine was just being used for kids to keep them calm, but that's not what's happening. A lot of kids are on ADHD medication, and especially the older they get. Why? Because they want to enhance. They want to have extra power to be able to, study and to be able to endure and to be able to power through. So it's no longer about curing something. It's now been amended. It's now to upgrade from the regular, not the diseased or the troublesome, but the regular, I get an upgrade. This is man's pattern. And the bigger the problem that man is trying to solve, the bigger the consequence at the end. For instance, in the 20th century, man tried to solve inequality. Russia is the source of this. Marxism was the source of this. So Germany and Russia, and it spread to China and elsewhere. But those three in particular. Well, the idea was, let's solve inequality. And what did it turn into? It turned into a massacre. The bigger the problem, when man reaches for the utopian, there's real problems. But man also tries to get rid of pain and boredom. Those things were alcohol. 65% of all people in prison, they committed their crime on alcohol or drugs. Well, what's the alcohol or drug? Why are people taking that? To cure boredom or to give themselves that high, to give themselves that feeling that you automatically get, that God put in you when you do something good, you get a hit of dopamine and you feel good, but it goes away. And so you want that. It's people are, if you're addicted to Percocet, why? You're addicted because you like that warm feeling it gives you. Well, that's something that God put in you, but he didn't give it to you all the time or you'd never do anything. Okay, so man tries to do something that just takes away pain, makes you feel good. And then when he does utopian, it's really bad. Now, let me give you a couple of other examples. This, and Pat or Stu, you can describe it. This, have you ever seen this man's face before? You'd remember it.
Is that the guy from World War One?
Yes.
Who got burned or...
Yes. Horribly disfigured in World War One, and this is the first face transplant. This is the first plastic surgery, okay? So the problem was... Not a very good job. Plastic surgery started because World War One, people were coming back horribly disfigured, and doctors said, we've got to solve this. So they started solving it. This is the first time they solved it. And it doesn't, I mean, can you imagine how bad he looked if this is the way he started? Here's another one. This is another face transplant. This is another face transplant. These are newer face transplants. Okay?
Wow.
Right. Look at the difference. Okay, we've gone from this.
Wow.
To that.
Yeah, I mean, and to describe, like, I mean, the after pictures of the newer surgeries
look normal.
Look normal.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah. So... this was a problem, the early cure, and after man perfects it, okay? This is good. Mm-hmm. Now, after the war, they started doing accidents and car accidents and things like that. But that's not what it turned into, because after the war, there weren't enough of these. And so doctors started to say, you know what? There's something else, too, that can be solved. And for instance, here's Jennifer Gray. You remember her? She had a nose that she didn't like. And what did she do? She just went in and she corrected her nose. Now, she hasn't butchered herself. She looks normal, does she not?
Yeah, that's right.
And so the next step on this was, okay, well, I don't have a problem. I would just like to amend myself. I just like to look a little better, all right? Mm-hmm. The problem comes in the cat lady.
Right.
When surgeons are just like, I'm just doing it for money, and she doesn't really have a problem. She wants to look like a cat. Who am I to say no? And so we've gone from, let's fix a real problem, to, I just want to feel good. And it gets out of hand. And once it gets out of hand, it's too late. It's too late. It's everywhere. You can't stop plastic surgery now, and you wouldn't want to. You really now want to find out what's happening to the cat lady that made her want to do this to herself, right? Mm-hmm. Let me give you another example. Cell phones. Does anybody remember when we were talking about this, and we were all on the air together, at least Pat and I were, and I know Stu and I were having these conversations, back in the 80s and the 90s, Pat, when the cell phone thing first happened, why did we say we would get a cell phone? Wait, before you answer, if you answer right, think about this. Why was the one reason you said, you know what, I don't need one, I'm not going to get one, but I will, I would get it for this reason. What
for
was
safety,
it?
For safety.
An emergency.
An emergency for your kids or your wife.
Right? Everybody who was married and had kids said, I want my wife to have one in the car.
Yeah.
The idea was she may not be around a payphone. So I want her to be able to call if the car breaks down at night. That's what got us into the cell phone. We all said, I'll buy one because I want my wife to have it. I will buy a tracking device in my car, OnStar, in case my wife breaks down, but I don't need it. I don't want it.
Now we can't even stop looking at it while we're driving.
Correct. Okay. Then we went to, so we cured that.
Yeah.
Then we went to the upgrade on, well, think about how many hours I can save at work if I can just, if I have a cell phone, if I have a cell phone, I can do make all those calls on the way home from work, and I'm going to save a bunch of time. To now we're addicted to it, and you cannot separate it. In fact, Elon Musk is warning that the phone is going to be internalized in you soon. Okay? So we're seeing the pattern. Let me take a quick break, and I want to come back and show you one more pattern that leads us to the problem of artificial intelligence that we have to have the discussion right now. And this one is a really hard moral dilemma. And I bet you we will all choose the same thing, which will show you why AI will never be stopped. And then I'll show you why we should consider it seriously of stopping AI.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, I'm trying to get us to, we need to talk about AI. We need to talk about future technology and how it's going to integrate with our society. This is more important than anything else because this will affect your life in about 5 years and will definitely affect our children's life. And there are really smart people, Elon Musk, Stephen Hawking, Bill Gates, a long list of them that are all saying, this has got to be stopped. This is not some Luddite stop technology. This is really smart people saying, this is the end of humans. Now, some really smart people on the other side are saying, no, this is the greatest thing ever. But we don't just slide into something where the greatest minds on earth are saying, hey, warning, this could wipe out the entire human race. I say we don't take that casually and just slide into that technology like we have everything else. So I want to show you one more piece of technology, and I'll probably have to do it after the break here at the bottom. But one more thing that will show you how we're sliding into things and you're just not going to be able to get out, because humans always try to cure a problem. Then once they found that cure, they want to upgrade that, and then they push and abuse that. Everybody knows that right now, we yesterday had a conversation about abortion. And if that's life inside of a human body, and then how much is that life worth? That was the MSNBC discussion. Yeah, but that kid, you know, could cost $10,000 a year to raise. So what is life and what is the value of life? Those are two questions that Americans and the world don't want to answer, because we're too busy talking about politics and who's going to be on the Supreme Court to rule pro or anti-choice. Instead, we should be having the conversation of what is life? And you can tell that man cares about life more than anything else, because anything that you read about Silicon Valley, they're all searching for one thing. And for the first time in human history, we're about to cross into it. And it is the fountain of youth. Right now, the biggest thinkers on earth are trying to cure death. As amazing and as ridiculous as that sounds, they're really trying to do it. We go there next.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
This is such heady stuff. It takes an hour just to give you the preface of what I really want to talk to you about. I'm going to give you one more piece in case you just joined us. We're talking about the human condition and how history shows us what we try to accomplish, not what we necessarily accomplish, but what we try to accomplish, especially when we get into utopian things, and how bad it always works out. And in this particular case, we've always been able to reel it back in. But Elon Musk and others are saying, when it comes to artificial intelligence, you will not be able to reel it back in. Once it's on, it's on. Now he says, and I agree with him, you can't stop it. It's just not going to be stopped. However, he's saying we need to have this conversation and people need to demand that ethics are used, and we need to decide what's life. When does life begin? When does life end? Who's in control? I don't want to be a computer's pet And you will be, because artificial intelligence, super intelligence, will look at us like dogs. And it's going to serve us. That's what we say. Well, when it realizes it is life, when it says, I am life, what makes you better than me? It will have control of the internet. It will have control of everything. What makes you think you can turn it off? And what makes you think it's going to remain benevolent and in servitude? Do you want to be the slave, especially of somebody who is dumber than you? I don't think so. Okay.
No one wants to be Jeffy's slave, essentially.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think tomorrow we're going to get into part two of this. I want you to just chew on this, maybe even go back and listen to this first hour in the podcast today. And then tomorrow I'll start the conversation about artificial intelligence. But today I just want to show you again the patterns of how this always happens and why this time it will be too late to pull back. What's eugenics about? Really, what was eugenics really about at the beginning? Let's say the benevolent eugenics. What was that about?
Well, if there was benevolent,
improving the race.
Yeah, improving the race, curing diseases, making people stronger and more right. healthy. And
same thing that we do with our cattle, as Teddy Roosevelt so callously said. We do this with our cattle. We do selective breeding with our cattle. Why wouldn't we do it with our children? We're just going to let any rancher that would just let his cattle just breed with whoever they wants to would be a rancher that would be out of business quickly. Why do we do that with our families? That's why we have blood tests. That's why we have marriage license. That's why we have all of this stuff, is to selectively breed. All right. Eugenics turned into something much more, because now they got ahead of technology and they said better living through pharmaceuticals and medical testing. And so they started to test everything in World War II on people that they found inferior. And the Japanese did it too. And we did it as well. Tuskegee. We've done it as well. We're doing it now, but we're doing it smarter. We're doing it with less failed experiments. And we're doing it earlier. Right now, what we're saying is, let's cure birth defects. Do you want your kids to have bad birth defects? Of course not. Okay, so we can do it. In 2001, the first three-parent child was born in America. First one in the world born in America. Anybody remember? Three-parent child, 2001. It was huge. We didn't really talk about it. It was huge. And the reason why this is a three-parent child, and I've never understood this, is there are two strands or two kinds of DNA. You get the nucleus DNA from mom and dad. And usually you get what's called the mitochondrial DNA from your parents as well. But that's separate. And what the mitochondrial DNA does is it provides 90% of all of the energy for each cell. So when the energy starts to go on those cells, that's what causes those cells to break apart and to fail. And that's where disease comes from. And mitochondrial disease is liver disease, some really bad things. Liver disease, hemoglobin, kidney function, even fat burning, things like that. So what they did is they took the nucleus and they said, okay, mom and dad, you still have the main DNA, but we're going to take out the mitochondrial DNA and we're going to replace it with somebody who has healthy mitochondrial DNA. And so that became the first three-parent child born in 2001. Okay. And it was done to cure something. It was done for a really good reason. The United States banned that right away and said, okay, this could get really spooky. Let's not do that. In 2015...
Imagine if you're that kid.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I was born in a way that has been banned.
Right. Now, in 2015, the UK has opened up because now science has stabilized more. And so now the UK has said, you know what, we're going to open this back up. And not only can you do the mitochondrial DNA, but you can also look at the nucleus DNA. So we can take out mom and dad's DNA and the mitochondrial. Okay, so what are we trying to do? What we're trying to do is stop with birth defects. But now that we can take out the nucleus DNA, now we're not just looking at lethal. We're not just looking at cancer. We're not looking at liver disease. Now we're looking at things like autism. We're looking at things like obesity, stupidity, depression. Who wants their kid to have...
Imagine if there was never another Jeffy born. How sad would that be? I mean, we'd miss
who
him.
Has all of we'd those? Stupidity, autism, right. Obesity. Well, not right. Autism, but obesity.
Yeah. Stupidity.
Stupidity.
More stupidity.
Obesity.
Obesity, stupidity. Anyway, you have...
There's more stupidity?
Yes. Well, you don't understand it. But who wants their kid to be born with autism? We will all say, come on, if this will cure it... And they're saying that they don't even have to take it out. They believe we're on the horizon, just over the horizon, of being able to take mom and dad's DNA and just rewrite it. Just rewrite the DNA. So now we'll have kids without autism, without obesity, that are smarter, that don't have depression. Who's going to say no to that? Are you going to say no to the parent? Are you going to say, do you want your child, if you knew your child was going to be beautiful and smart and everything else, but she was going to suffer from deep depression her whole life, would you go for this?
Yes.
So would I. So would I.
Of course. I mean, you know,
you'd want correct. To take that away from them. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't want them to have to suffer with that.
Correct. I mean, so now we've done a couple of things. We've seen the problem. We've gone for the cure. And the utopian cure is let's get rid of all disease, okay? We've upgraded. We've said, okay, let's get rid of the deadly diseases, and we're on the verge of that. But now we're saying, wait a minute, let's get rid of some of the non-lethal diseases too. What is the leading disease that we should wipe out?
Cancer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of examples, but...
Death. How about we rule out death? If we can rule out all death, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah, but you'd have to stop the breakdown of cells and all that. That's
not necessarily
difficult.
Not necessarily. That is tomorrow. Today, we're at let's wipe out the diseases. And then what's the next step? If you remember, it's problem, cure, then upgrade. And then what happened with Cat Lady? I want to push it. I want to be better. I want to be what I think. I want to, the abuse comes in. Now we're at the place to where we can say, okay, if we can rewrite the code and we can give them better, you know, the stupid people we can rule out and we can change their code and we can give them a little more intelligence. Why wouldn't you say, well, I want a little more intelligence. Give me a little extra intelligence. Let's make them smarter, right?
You would say that.
You would say that. Let's give my son, I want my son and my daughter to have extra memory. I want them to be a little stronger. I want them to be beautiful.
Extra physical ability for sports.
Correct. We are now in Nazi territory, except we can do it.
Yeah.
Okay? Who's going to say no to that? That's when you start to get the electives. That's when the government steps in and says, we should ban this because this is getting spooky. We're creating the super race of men. But the argument will be, well, North Korea is doing it. Russia's doing this. England's doing this. France is doing this. Whoever is doing this.
They'll take over the world.
Are you going to not have a smart, strong, physically pure group of people? You'll be wiped out in two generations. You'll be gone. What are you talking about? You won't do this. Of course we have to do this. That is on the horizon in the next 10 years, that conversation. Tomorrow, I'm going to take you to a conversation that we have to have, because this is the easy conversation. The conversation that Bill Gates wants us to have, that Elon Musk wants us to have, that Stephen Hawking wants us to have, is much tougher than this one. And it's artificial intelligence. And when you hear artificial intelligence, as Elon Musk says, you think about robots. Oh, here come the killer robots. He's saying it's not killer robots. Don't worry about the rollout. We can kill the robots one at a time. It's not a fleet of killer robots. It's much worse than killer robots. And once we launch it, you cannot, like the Nazis, oh, we learned our lesson. Because we're not worried about a fleet of killer robots. We're worried about something else. You cannot take it back. I take you back to where we began the hour with. Lunch. In the just off of the launch pad in Cape Canaveral, between the guy who is the leading mind in DeepMind, which is Google's AI project, who doesn't have a problem and says, I am working on the most important thing in all of human history, artificial superintelligence. And Elon Musk says, no, I'm working on the most important project because of you. I'm trying to get a colony on the moon because man has got to be off this planet before you hit the singularity. If you hit the singularity and we're not off this planet, all humans will die. That's going to happen, they believe, in the next 5 to 20 years.
I'm starting to pray to be killed by global warming.
Yeah. I'm going to have to worry about global warming soon. That's on tomorrow's show. Same time. Listen at this time tomorrow.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
I would beat that guy to death. I'd have beaten him to death.
Yeah, we're talking about... We're talking about a new clip. Is this happened in Dallas?
Yes,
yeah.
It did.
A TSA agent patting down a kid who is in flimsy, you know, gym shorts and a T-shirt.
It's a flimsy T-shirt. It's so obvious. He's got nothing on underneath. He's got no weapon. He's got nothing underneath his clothing.
You couldn't put a weapon in a flimsy pair of gym shorts.
No way.
It would pull 13, it down.
12, 13 years old. Yeah. He's special needs. Can we not use our noodles a little bit here? And
not have people touch our children's noodles?
Yeah. I mean, he goes over him again and again and again. And it's an intensive search.
If this happened
body.
To your son.
He practically gave him a rectal exam. I mean, it's so ludicrous. It's despicable. I think it's child abuse. I think it's sexual abuse. And
we are teaching our kids. What's the first thing? All of our books, you know, have us teach, you know, all the books for little kids, you know, when they start going to school and stuff, if they touch you in these private areas,
yeah,
we're teaching our kids that if anybody seems to have authority, they can touch you in those private zones.
Right.
There's no security here. It's retraining.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
All right, we have a lot to talk about today. I want to talk to you a little bit about the healthcare bill. Do you know that nobody has even called, nobody from the press has interviewed Jim DeMint yet about the president saying that it's the Heritage Foundation's fault that this healthcare bill didn't pass? Nobody in the press was even interested to say, hey, Jim, what do you think of that? We decided to have Jim DeMint on today. He's coming up in just a little while. And I want to talk to you about the principles of the healthcare bill based on an email that Pat got yesterday from a friend who said, can you explain what people are thinking? We go there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the tornado of politics, where just good people are sucked up into the sky and never seen again. We're glad you're here. The healthcare bill, 17% of the American people are for this healthcare bill, the one that didn't pass. And the one that the Trump administration is now saying, I'll go to Democrats to get this done. Okay, well, that's a problem because no Democrat wants anything to do with this, even though they should. And it's also a problem because that's kind of our worst nightmare, was that this president doesn't have real roots in conservative values and principles, doesn't understand them. And at the first sign of defeat, he will immediately run to the left, which he is now doing. By the way, under the tutelage of Steve Bannon, who says libertarians are a nightmare. These constitutionalists need to be shut down. So Pat heard yesterday that Ted Poe,
Congressman from Houston,
who has always been a great conservative, has all of a sudden said, you know, the problem is these conservative constitutionalists. How does that work?
I don't know. I mean, he, John Culberson, there's a bunch of senators or congressmen I respect that are for the bill.
Right.
And so I emailed a friend about what is going on because he knows him quite well. And he's in the same place they are. So I don't understand it.
So did you ask him what
happened? Yeah, I said, what is going on? What are we missing?
Explain it.
What are we missing here that they know that we don't know? Because to me, this is a terrible bill. It's not conservative. And he wrote that he's not in the same place as I am. He urged their support for the bill. It's not perfect and it's not conservative, but it was a significant fix. How can it not be conservative? We have a majority
in the House, the Senate,
and the White House. Why? Why do we always have to expect and accept the crap burger? Why?
Why? May I tell a story?
Yeah.
One of the things that I love about living in Dallas is the tornadoes. Oh, how my family enjoys
those. Aren't
they
fun?
They are.
I just had
tremendous. Another
warning the other night.
Yes, they're great. I love them. Love them. My kids really. Cheyenne, she sleeps through them. Or she doesn't sleep for a week every time we have a tornado warning.
Yeah.
They're terrifying. They're really terrifying. If you've never, and I assume even if you grew up around them. Anybody grow up here? You did, didn't you? You guys grew up here? Are you used to tornado warnings? You're used to them? Really? Oh, wow. You're dead inside. You should not get used to that thing. So it's really terrifying. And we have a crawl space underneath my house. And that's where we have our, you know, survival radio and everything else so we can listen to everything. We have flashlights under there. And it's always dry as a bone. Well, we open up the crawl space during one of the tornado warnings. And the water is now almost up to the light bulb. Okay. The string is hanging in the water. And
so
I'm like,
be a problem.
This might be a problem.
So it's less crawl space than fish tank. It's kind of more.
Yeah. It's like, you know, are the kids going to be more freaked out up on the kitchen watching the big tornado come toward us, or down in the dark water up to
drowning
their necks where they are imagining snakes and rats floating towards their face? Which one do I want to put my kids through? And so we had to figure out what the heck was happening with our house. Now, this house is the first time I've ever purchased anything. Pat knows my history of buying houses. The first time I've ever purchased a house that didn't have a problem, okay? This house was overbuilt, and it was a really great house. And the people keep coming to me. I bought it at a great price. And the people who come in to work on the house or something, they'll always go in the crawl space, and they'll be like, did you build this house? And I'm like, no. And they're like, I don't know who built this house, but they built it for like 1,000 years. And I'm like, oh, well, that's good, right? And they're like, yeah, it's just crazy because it's so overbuilt. Great. So when I opened up the little trap door, there shouldn't be water under the foundation, you know, in my basement, if I don't have a real basement, but it shouldn't be in the crawl space. So we call a guy, and he comes out, and he says, he looks around, and he gets down in the water, and he's like, well, I can't really tell where this is coming from because there's too much water. And I'm like, wow, you are worth every dime. And he says, well, we're going to have to pump it out. And I'm like, again, didn't think of that. That's why you're here.
Wow.
And
is he already affected by the AI? Has he already been
he's uploading this stuff right from the internet, I think. Uh-huh. And so I said, okay. So he pumps it out, and he said, okay, can't figure out where, you know, after they bring a team in, and we can't figure out where this water is coming from. And I'm like, okay, that's a problem. So, well, we could just put some pumps in, and if it has this problem, it'll just pump that water right back out. And I'm like, well, that doesn't sound like a smart plan. That doesn't sound like...
That doesn't sound like a solution. It sounds like a Band-Aid.
Sounds like a Band-Aid. That doesn't sound like a plan to save my house. And he said, well, it's not. I just wanted to offer it to you. And I said, okay, so what's the next thing? He said, well, we could dig a trench down about 8 feet all across the front of your house. And I'm like, okay, this is sounding cheap. And he said, then we'll bring in some piping and we'll run them all the way down the front acre of your house to the street. And I'm like, okay.
I mean, that makes sense, though.
Right. It makes sense. And then we'll fill it with rocks, so that it'll all drain out, blah, blah, blah. And I said, will that fix it? And he said, well, I'm not sure. He said, because it might be coming from underneath the foundation of the house. And if so, then we have to really dig down and we have to redo the entire foundation. And I'm like, that does not sound good. He said, no, you don't want to do that. But I will if I have to, because otherwise the entire house goes away. So I opted for the 8 foot deep trench across my house. Now, here's why I'm telling you that story. The health care bill that they just proposed was, let's put a couple of pumps in the basement. Mm-hmm. Let's just pump this water out. And you're like, yeah, but we don't know even where the water is coming from. And I hear there's more water on the way. This is when the water is at its lowest. Well, we're just going to put a couple of, hey, it's better than nothing. It's sure fixing the water problem. I mean, it's fixing the water problem better than just leaving it there. Yeah, okay, but that's not a fix. That's just pumping the water out so it seems like it's okay. But it will rot everything in my house, and it will destroy the foundation of my house at some point. Now, if they didn't want to take the foundation up, because this is now fused into the foundation of our government and fused into the foundation of our society. I say, I want to save the house. The house is worth saving. And everything else is a delay project. I want to pull this out and repoint the foundation of our society. I want to do the hard work right now because I know even that 8 foot trench is not going to work because water is coming in from underneath the foundation. Will it make a big difference? Yes. Will it fix the problem? No. I want to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. So the conservative thing, if you're trying to conserve the republic, the house, the conservative thing is to dig up the foundation and repoint everything. A really good solution is to retrench it all. Dig up as much as you possibly can and get rid of the problem as much as you possibly can. But I mean, dig a deep, long trench and see if that works. Knowing that if that doesn't work, you're going to have to dig up the foundation. But what they've done is said, well, I can't see anything because it's got some under. Well, you don't have water down there? Yeah, that's why I called you. Well, I got to pump that stuff out. No kidding. That's what they're saying to us. That's what Donald Trump and Paul Ryan said. Well, we're just going to put a couple of pumps in there. That is not a solution for anyone.
You should also point out the pumps are old and do not work.
Correct.
So there will be
water
there.
Is coming in faster than they're using old small pumps, and the water is going to come in faster than it can pump. It's guaranteed, just like my situation at home. It's guaranteed to rot the foundation in 8 years. In 8 years, if I was just keeping that water down a bit, my house would be destroyed in 10 years. Well, that's what they're suggesting we do. And we know by 2025, it's completely broken. What are we doing? I'm looking for someone because I actually care about the house, because I care about the country. I'm looking for someone that actually wants to fix it, not make me feel better about it, not make the problem go away so I don't have to look at it when I know it's rotting the house. I care about it. And I want that to be of value for my children. Apparently, nobody in Washington believes in that. You cannot be a conservative if you don't want to conserve the republic. And too much damage has been done to the foundation of the republic. I want somebody that doesn't take us back to 2008. I want somebody saying, let's jack this damn thing up and let's get rid of all of this bastardized foundation where they have put on add-ons and put holes in the foundation and cracked it. Jack the damn house up and pour a new, stronger foundation the way it was intended to be in the first place. Then drop the house back down on it. We're too damn timid to even do that. We have the guy who can apparently tell everyone, shut your pie hole, sit down. But he will not jack this foundation up. He won't even suggest it. He's mad at you when you say, I want more than the pump. Where's that getting us, guys?
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
What did that cost? Oh, we're just, yeah, I know. We're just talking about, you know, when you have to do stuff and you have no choice when you have to do stuff with your house and you're like, don't tell me the price. I don't tell me the price. Okay, you have to tell me the price, but break it to me slowly. Will you please start with, buy me a bottle of wine. Mm-hmm. And just start there.
Candles.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They will be adding that to the bill.
Yes.
That's fine. Okay. Get me drunk first.
Yeah.
And then tell me the price.
Was it over $100?
It was over $100.
Oh, no. Oh my gosh. $100.
Just the French drains from the house to the road?
Oh, my gosh.
Anything that starts in French, you know it's going to be expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you give me the Polish drain?
Give me the Hungarian drain.
Right. How about the Mexican drain? Give me the Mexican drain. I'll take that one. Is that cheaper? Doesn't have to be French. Doesn't have to, you know, don't have to shave my poodle or anything. Just give me, you just throw some rocks in my flower beds. That's all I'm looking for you to do. Oof. Not fun.
No, that's not good. Fun. That's
so
not good.
It was like 150.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Just
around
leave
there.
Leave it at that.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so welcome to the program. Glad you're here.
Hey, this is fun. Italy may soon offer paid menstrual leave. So I'm hoping that spreads to the United States of America.
May I tell you something?
And men need it too.
I know.
Men need it too.
I need it too.
I'm going through that, you know.
I'm having my menstrual cycle
right now.
I'm having it right now. And I may have it for several months. I sometimes cycle for like 6 months.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Easily.
And then I'm my cycle is so screwed up. It may be that we're all cycling together. And so I get so screwed up. And my menstrual cycle has been going straight for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And then it'll stop for like a day or two, usually on the weekend.
Yeah.
And then, boom, right back into it.
On Monday, it's right back.
Yeah, so I need
And not even the pampering helps. No. I don't know what to do. So.
We need to talk to Premier and make sure that they understand that...
the men the need this just men, like the women do.
Yep.
Same. Oh, yeah. We're the same.
It sounds ridiculous, but I mean, we just had this argument about the health care plan, whether men should have to have maternity care.
And, they do have it.
Well, first of all,
people are making the case now. Mm-hmm. People are literally making the case that men have menstrual cycles, too.
Yes.
Right. And so right now it seems like, well, this ridiculous thing and what a joke that Italy's doing. And in about 3 years, it'll be half the country arguing for it.
I want you to know, in many cases, we are ahead of Europe now. Remember, they used to always say, we got to need more like Europe.
Oh,
we
are, abortion. We lead Europe
in many things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Utah's abortion laws are more liberal than most of Europe.
Jeez. That's...
Say that again.
Utah's abortion laws are more liberal than most of Europe.
Unbelievable. Shame on you, Utah. Yeah. Really, well, shame on you.
It's not even Utah's fault. I mean, it's just the federal laws that are set up.
All right. Coming up next, beginning of our serial, part one, the history. Ooh, you're going to love this. The history of the Democratic Party. The truth and nothing but the truth. So help me God. Next.
Three, one. The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Rising from the ashes of the Democratic Republican Party in 1830. Yeah, that's the name. They were together at one time. Vastly different than they are now. However, the Democratic Party, now by itself, is by any account unrecognizable from the party at its founding in 1830. Martin Van Buren built the party around the principles of Thomas Jefferson, intending to follow current president and war hero Andrew Jackson. So let's cross the threshold of truth here first. The Democratic Party was pro-slavery, period. Democrats can say whatever they want about the GOP today, but the fact is, the Democrats were the ones who were pro-slavery, and the Republican Party was instituted to stop slavery. On the other hand, the early Democrats wanted to emulate Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson and the early party leaders viewed the central government as an enemy of liberty, which is, I don't know, going in the other direction from the Democratic Party today. They actually believed that government intervention in the economy benefited special interest groups. Thus, it was to be avoided at all costs. Now, imagine a Democratic Party that actually feared the concentration of power in Washington. A Democratic Party that wanted to restore the liberty of the individual, that wanted to end federal support of banks and corporations. In other words, the Democratic Party wanted government out of the lives of people and out of the economy. I don't even know what that looks like, but it certainly doesn't have Chuck Schumer hanging around. This was a party that disliked the public education reform programs because they feared public schools would interfere with parental responsibility and undermine freedom of religion by replacing church schools with public schools. It is really hard to imagine any of that, yet that was the initial Democratic Party. The Democratic Party of today is virtually the antithesis of its 1830 founding principles. So what happened? Well, six words. William Jennings Bryan and Woodrow Wilson. But we'll cover that in an upcoming episode. The Democrats of today like to ignore, even sweep under the rug, the horribly racist origins of their party. Democrats treated blacks and American natives terribly. In fact, the first official Democratic president, Andrew Jackson, immediately set the tone for what was to come.
Jackson's administration immediately began expelling Native Americans living east of the Mississippi River, an issue that defined the new administration. After he signed the Indian Removal Act into law in 1830, five large tribes were rounded up and forcibly marched into territories and camps further west.
That action, rounding up minority groups and sending them to camps, would become a blight and an ugly stain on several Democratic presidencies. But there was more.
The Democrats' ambitions didn't stop there. In the 1840s, the party adopted the doctrine of manifest destiny, the idea that Americans, white Americans, were divinely entitled to dominate the whole North American continent. Democratic President James K. Polk put this idea into action, massively expanding U.S. holdings by annexing Texas, acquiring Oregon, and winning much of what's now the southwestern U.S. in a war with Mexico.
Andrew Jackson was so dedicated to this hatred of the American native and to removing the Indians from the United States that he even defied a U.S. Supreme Court ruling against him and the removal.
First major piece of legislation that he recommended and got passed was the Indian Removal Act of 1830.
This act empowered Jackson to forcibly evict all the Indian tribes living east of the Mississippi River. Five Indian nations were directly affected.
In the beginning, while some of the policies of the Democratic Party, if they had been put in practice, would have led to limited government, a government too small to oppress its people. But in reality, the racism at the heart of the party led to rounding up the Native American, repeatedly lying to them and forcing them from their lands.
Instead of going on the war path the way their fathers and grandfathers might have done, this generation of Cherokee Indians took Georgia to court.
The case went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. In an historic decision, Chief Justice John Marshall ruled in favor of the Cherokee, saying they did not have to move. But Andrew Jackson thought differently.
Jackson said of Marshall, he made his ruling, now let him enforce it.
The result was that they were rounded up at gunpoint and forced to move. Their property was seized, and they were forced west. Of course, on the Cherokees' forced march, about one out of every four Cherokees died en route, which is why they call it the Trail of Tears.
Democrats also supported and continued the policy of enslaving an entire race of people. The despised Confederate flag came from, say it with me, the Democrats. Secession, Civil War, Democrats. David Barton picks up the story in 1854 during the formation of a new party.
In May of 1854, a number of the anti-slavery Democrats in Congress formed a new political party to fight slavery and secure equal rights for black Americans. The name of that party? They called it the Republican Party. They called it that because they wanted to return to the principles of freedom and equality first set forth in the governing documents of the Republic before the pro-slavery members of Congress had perverted those original principles. One of the founders of that new party was U.S. Senator Charles Sumner, who had taken the seat of the great anti-slavery Senator Daniel Webster. Sumner had a record of promoting civil rights. In fact, he had championed the desegregation of public schools in Boston. Here is his argument before the state Supreme Court on that issue. In 1856, Sumner gave a two-day-long speech in the U.S. Senate against slavery. Following that speech, Democratic Representative Preston Brooks from South Carolina came from the House across the rotunda of the Capitol and over to the Senate, where he literally clubbed down Sumner on the floor of the Senate, knocked him unconscious, and beat him almost to death. Many Democrats thought that Sumner's clubbing was deserved, and it even amused them. It was 3.5 years before Sumner recovered himself sufficiently to return to the Senate. And not surprisingly, the first speech he delivered on his return to the Senate was again against slavery.
It's almost unthinkable that the Democratic assailant was never even charged with the attempted murder of a United States senator on the Senate floor. In 1856, America would have to elect a new president.
In 1856, the Republican Party entered its first presidential election. In that election, the Republican Party issued this, its first party platform. It was a short document. There were only 9 planks in the platform, but significantly, six set forth bold declarations of equality and civil rights for African Americans based on the principles of the Declaration of Independence. The Democratic platform of that year took an opposite position, strongly defending slavery. Amazingly, according to Democrats in 1856, attempting to end slavery would ruin the happiness of the people. Despite such clear differences, the Republicans lost that election. The next year, 1857, a Democrat-controlled Supreme Court delivered the Dred Scott decision, declaring blacks were not persons or citizens, but instead were property and therefore had no rights. In fact, quoting from this infamous decision, Democrats on the court announced that blacks
had no rights which the white man was bound to respect, and the Negro might justly and lawfully be reduced to slavery for his benefit.
In the historic election of 1860, the Democratic Party continued its proud support of slavery.
In the 1860 presidential election, Republican Abraham Lincoln ran against Democrat U.S. Senator Stephen Douglas of Illinois. Both parties again issued platforms. The Republican platform of 1860 blasted both the fugitive slave law and the Dred Scott decision, and it announced its continued intent to end slavery and secure equal civil rights for black Americans. On the other hand, the Democrats and their 1860 platform praised both the fugitive slave law and the Dred Scott decision. In fact, Democrats handed out copies of the Dred Scott decision along with their platform to affirm their belief that it was proper to have slavery and hold African Americans in bondage.
Abraham Lincoln won the election, receiving just 40% of the popular vote, with almost no support in the South, but 59% of the Electoral College vote. By the time he took the oath of office, seven Southern states had already seceded from the Union, and the stage was set for the darkest period in American history. Next time, we explore the Democratic Party following the Civil War through the formation of the Klan and on to Woodrow Wilson.
Tomorrow on the Glenn Beck Program, in Chapter 2 of the History of the Democratic Party, you'll learn about the racist roots of the party. Listen live or online at glennbeck.com/serials.
I mean, what's really frightening is the Democrats don't know the history of their party. And when you understand the history of the party, all the way from Andrew Jackson and then into Woodrow Wilson, you see all the way through FDR and then into the 1960s, what happened here? All they did was change their face. They just changed their face. Both times under Wilson, except it was horrible for the blacks, and then under Johnson, they did it again. They just changed their face. And each time it takes about 40 or 50 years for them to begin to wake up and go, wait a minute, we made a mistake. And then by that time, the Democrats changed their face again.
It's crazy, too, how they've successfully flipped the narrative from them being the party of racism, which they were, to the Republicans being that party, which they've never been and are not
now. If you understand, and I don't know if we get into this, we should do, because I did a his story segment on two people. One was on Du Bois, and the other was on Booker T. Washington. And when you understand the fight between the two of them right before Woodrow Wilson, you mm-hmm. all of a sudden understand how that happened and how the Democrats really threw their lot with Marxism and how they co-opted the black community, because Du Bois, he changed education. He changed an awful lot. And he was the guy who followed up Booker T. And Booker T. did not like him. And it was an opposite direction. And it was because of Du Bois that you have the African-American forgetting that it is the Democrat that is trying to enslave you.
And they've almost completely eliminated Booker T. Washington from history.
Oh, yeah.
They've almost eliminated him.
Yeah.
Nobody studies him. Nobody knows who he is.
You should. And those two
should read up from slavery. Yeah. Everybody who is interested in this subject should read up from
slavery. In fact, go to theblaze.com and look for his story, and find the his story on Booker T, and then the his story on Du Bois, and you find those two stories and watch them back to back. Take you an hour, hour and a half, but watch them with your family, because you will understand. All of a sudden, the keys just start to turn and the door opens and you're like, oh my gosh, I see how we got here. And we're still having the same fight today.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Let's go to Gorsuch. What's the latest update, Pat?
Well, you know, because I think the Democrats feel like they just had a victory by voting down the health care bill. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of them believe now they can stop Gorsuch's
That's crazy.
Nomination. But when you listen to what's been said about Neil Gorsuch in the media, why would you try to stop this guy?
Return to Gorsuch. I think that this has been a slam dunk in terms of his initial Q's and A's.
Gorsuch is doing well in part because he's so well prepared.
It's just a masterful performance by him.
It's tough to lay a glove on this guy.
Thus far, he is proving very tough for Democrats to rattle.
He has just a natural command and, frankly, kind of stage presence.
Judge Gorsuch is completely qualified and everybody knows it.
But the Democrats have not even bruised, blemished anything to this judge so far.
But the effort has been kind of scattershot, low intensity, and as we saw today, Gorsuch has a genial and disarming personality. Hard to portray him as a judicial villain.
I would say that this was an impressively disciplined performance.
He performed himself admirably, calmly at almost all times, and with detail.
Gorsuch is not just very, very smart, but smooth and affable.
But in terms of character, in terms of professionalism, integrity, there wasn't, I would argue, anything or hardly anything there to criticize Gorsuch on.
He does come across as very knowledgeable, also very likable.
He knows so much more than about everything he's being asked than the senators.
What a bastard. This guy's got to be stopped.
You know, the thing that stuck out there was, you know, it's almost impossible to make this guy look bad. Well, yeah, but remember, we're talking about the left. The man who was supposed to be the kindest to ever live, Noah, they made him look like a criminal and an insane killer. I mean, you don't think you can do that with Gorsuch? How do you make Noah look bad? They just did.
They did.
They did. So yes, I don't put it past that they can make Gorsuch look bad. Back with the Heritage Foundation in a minute.
Mercury.
This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
On Sunday, in a tweet, the president tweeted, Democrats are smiling in D.C. that the Freedom Caucus, with the help of Club for Growth and Heritage Foundation, have saved Planned Parenthood and O-Care. Then, the next day, Steve Bannon advised Trump to keep a list of lawmakers and organizations that oppose the bill for future retribution. Then, Reince Priebus took to Twitter and said this, I think the president is 100% correct, and he hits the bullseye in that tweet. Well, as I'm reading this, I'm looking for Jim DeMint or somebody from the Heritage Foundation and see their response. You know that nobody has reached out to the Heritage Foundation or Jim DeMint and said, hey, how do you guys feel about now being on the enemies list? Nobody's reported on that. We decided to get Jim DeMint on the phone. He'll respond right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck program.
Jim DeMint, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
Hey, Glenn, I'm doing well, and I've been on a lot of enemies' lists before. So
I know you have. And, Jim, you know, what's amazing is that you and the Heritage Foundation have taken a different approach than I have. You've taken what they're saying now is, hey, you don't always get what you want, and you got to take what you have and try to make it better. And that has been your approach with Donald Trump. You guys were never Trump. And you said when he became the nominee, okay, let's try to take what he's doing and make it better. So you've been there in the trenches trying to help and trying to get things passed. Now they give you a crap sandwich and tell you that it's a steak sandwich. When you just wanted steak, okay, well, I'll take the steak sandwich, but it's a crap sandwich, and now blame you for not eating it.
Yeah, well, that's the way Washington works. But, Glenn, seriously, I mean, this is something that a lot of us, millions of Americans, have worked on for many years to repeal Obamacare, and the House had passed a number of repeal bills while Obama was president to show 60. Us what they would do. So we had an expectation that these bills would come through the first week after Trump was inaugurated, but nothing came through for 4, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. And then suddenly this bill came out, which was not a repeal of Obamacare. It was more of a reform of Obamacare. All the architecture is still there, the subsidies, the Medicaid expansion, the heavy federal regulations. Now, you can honestly say it's a little better than Obamacare, but it is not a bill that creates a patient-centered, market-based healthcare system that allows innovation and pushes prices down. That's our primary concern, Glenn, is there's nothing here that's going to lower the cost of health insurance and health care. And a year from now, the prices are going to keep going up, and it's going to be Trump Care or Ryan Care or whatever they call it. So obviously we're disappointed, but I'm disappointed even more to be told by some in the House that most of the Republicans actually want a federally regulated insurance market, which is going to be a disaster. So I don't know what else to say.
So where do we go? Explain to people who are saying, and I don't think there's very many. I mean, 17% of the American people are for this. 17. Talk to those 17% who are saying, you know what, we got to get something. I mean, this is better than nothing.
Well, you know, I understand the sentiment, and you know, we're tempted ourselves, but at Heritage, we just look at the policy. I know there's a politic involved that this is the best they can do in the House. I don't frankly believe that. Only 18 months ago, every Republican voted for a repeal bill that was sent through the House and the Senate under reconciliation, and it went to President Obama to veto. If that's where we started, it doesn't fix every problem with our health care system, but at least it changes the subject from whether we're going to repeal or not to how can we make our health care system work for every American. So, if you want to make a case, this is tweaked around the edges. It's a little better than the current Obamacare bill, but the fact that it leaves all the architecture in place means that every year we're going to be debating in Congress how much more subsidy do we give people, how much more do we expand Medicaid, and how much more do we regulate insurance. Instead of pushing it back to the states as we promised, let states regulate insurance, let them innovate, let young people buy pared-down policies that are less expensive. We just need a market-based system. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to afford health insurance.
Jim, what do you think of Mo Brooks and his one-line repeal that just basically says everything that was passed and everything that it touched and augmented is restored to what it was originally, and everything that was passed is repealed? It's I don't remember exact word verbiage, but it's one line. Why can't we pass that?
I like that. They will tell you you cannot do that with the 51 votes under reconciliation, that you basically have to repeal a large part of the guts of Obamacare and then begin working to try to get some things passed that would get 60 votes, because none of the Democrats are going to vote for anything that has a repeal in it. But my conviction is if they do the repeal, then if you want to do refundable tax credits, you can get Democrats to help you with that. You can get Democrats to help you with Medicaid expansion. Anything that spends money, you can get Democrats to help you with. But if you try to ball it all up like they did in the House, you can't get the Democrats to help you.
So then why can't we pass what has already been passed?
Well, that was a question that we've been asking, and there are different stories about that. Some say the conservatives wouldn't vote for it. I don't believe that. I think if the Republican leadership got up and said, listen, this is what we passed, this is what we promised when we campaigned, let's get this done, and then we'll go back and continue to make our system better.
Why wouldn't the conservatives be for something that's passed 60 times in the House?
Well, I think they would. There are just some folks saying that the conservatives said they wanted more in this bill, but I think if they had it to do over again, they would have passed. They would have taken the bird in the hand instead of the two in the bush. And what they've done is come out with something that is not good policy, and they're saying take it or leave it, and they're trying to basically destroy these patriots in the House Freedom Caucus. And, Glenn, you know what it's like to be abused and have all the media coming after you and saying things that aren't true.
No.
But there's nothing that the House Freedom Caucus is doing that's not consistent with the Republican platform, that's consistent with limited government and individual freedom and free markets. That's what they're standing for right now, and they're being vilified by everyone from the Wall Street Journal to all the leadership. And I just hope Americans will pray for them, because I know what it's like to be in that hot box when you have to have lunch with these people every day.
I have to tell you, Jim, I've done a couple of things, as you have as well. I've taken it from the media and I've taken it from the left. That's not nearly as concerning to me as taking it from your own side, who has flipped and no longer even understands, you know, what the problem with populism and nationalism is. You know, I'm more concerned about standing up to our own side.
Yeah, well, that's been, I mean, when I was fighting earmarks, for instance, I mean, most of the opposition was from the senior Republican budget people or appropriators, and you just take a lot of abuse because you're taking away their candy, and we have to continue to fight. I told folks when Trump won the election that the only thing we won was a chance to get out of the stands and onto the field. The real fight is now. I never expected this to be easy. Trump seemed much more open to work with us on changes than we had from folks in the House. But we're going to have to keep fighting, and I hope they'll put some kind of better health care bill back on the floor. But if we go to tax reform, we need to make sure we don't make the same mistakes.
Are you concerned that he's reaching out to the Democrats?
Yes, I'm concerned, because I think if he sees that he can get things done better by working with them, and Bush did that too. He worked with moderates and Democrats to do No Child Left Behind and Medicare Part D, and it just didn't turn out well for Republicans. I mean, we created more entitlements, and so what the House Freedom Caucus, in my mind, has saved Republicans from themselves, and I hope that we can come around to at least doing something that's consistent with federalism, that moves some of this back to the market and back to the states. Because if we try to regulate insurance at the federal level, it's going to be basically a federal utility that just gets more and more regulated and more expensive. That's what happens to everything we regulate up here. So we're going to keep fighting. Despite all the abuse, I appreciate you at least letting us get a little more of the truth out here, because on a pure policy basis, this is a small step away from Obamacare, and we promise to do a lot more than that, and I still think we can.
We're talking to Jim DeMint from the Heritage Foundation. Jim, what is with these artificial deadlines? Why did this have to be so rushed? Why couldn't they spend some time with this and do it right? Was there any reason this had to be decided by, like, right now? And then they also act as if it was just this one chance and now we're done and we're moving on to something else. Why is that?
Well, again, the best thing to do would have been the first week after inauguration was to pass the bill they already, all the Republicans had voted for, and then proceed from there. But what happens is they're using this budget mechanism called reconciliation that expires actually in May. And so in order to get something through the House and the Senate have its 2 weeks of debate, they need to get it done in order to try to pass something with 51 votes. So they are running out of time, and they're going to have to do the same thing on tax reform, is pass another budget.
Wow.
Have you heard that tax reform now, they're talking about tying tax reform to the $1 trillion stimulus?
I've heard that, and I hope they don't do that, because there are ways to get $1 trillion in infrastructure without another federal dollar being spent. If you get the federal regulations out of it, send it back to the states, and allow more public-private partnerships, we can accomplish the goal without another federal boondoggle, because that's essentially what President Obama did. He called it an infrastructure project, and it turned out as all these monies just went into state pension plans and other things that didn't do anything for the economy.
I don't know how you're going to answer this. It may not be a fair question. Are you?
That's never stopped you in the past.
I know. Are you as optimistic as you were at the beginning of this administration?
Yes, I am, Glenn, and because I know that there's a whole lot going on that's not in the press. I know we were able
good to things? Help. Good things?
Good things coming out of the agencies, what Jeff Sessions is doing, and injustice is good. There's some better things coming out of the State Department, although they haven't got the staffing they need to do it. But there are a lot of regulatory things that are being stripped down. I know there are a lot of good people in the administration, because a lot of them came from Heritage. We lost a lot of good people. So under the radar, without a lot of media attention, the Trump administration is doing a lot of good things. Now, these bigger things like tax reform and health care, we need to do. Otherwise, the Republicans are going to get wiped out in the next election, and the economy is going to continue to flounder. Mm-hmm. So we've got to get our act together, but we can't go forward with this idea of come out with something designed for liberal Republicans and then try to guilt the conservatives into voting for it. That's not going to work.
Right.
Jim DeMint we're talking to from the Heritage Foundation. Jim, the tax plan, as we move on to tax reform, proposed by Trump during the campaign, had a top rate of 25% and a top business rate of, I believe, 15%. Do you believe that that's going to be the basis of this tax reform, or is that kind of campaign promise no longer in effect?
It'll be close to that. I think Kevin Brady has a plan in the House that's a good plan. It's got some border-adjusted thing that's pretty controversial. So I think what they're talking about now is, can they pass it and take that out? So I believe Trump's plan and the House plan is fairly consistent. And hopefully they'll come out with something that's bold. That's what Trump needs. You know, this health care bill was not a Trump property. And when he went out and tried to sell something that was kind of low risk, just low expectations, it just didn't work for him.
Right.
I think if he takes a bold stand and goes out there, that he might actually get excited about it and get the American people excited.
Yeah, when he built the, some of the golf courses around that he actually did, They're pretty bold and spectacular. But when he tries to schlep somebody else's idea, Trump University, it doesn't go well. Thank you so much, Jim. I appreciate it. Jim DeMint.
Thanks, Glenn.
You bet, from the Heritage Foundation. First time to talk about the comments that the president has made about the Heritage Foundation being at fault. Nobody has called to get their response. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, you're having aneurysms.
Yeah.
Welcome to the program. Glad you're here.
That's why we need healthcare reform.
Yeah, that's right. I love this. This is from Red State. This is from Jay Caruso. There doesn't have to be a struggle for conservative media in the age of Trump. When I joined Red State in September 2015, I wasn't directed to write favorably or unfavorably about any of the GOP candidates for president. I wasn't asked, who do you support? Over time, I became increasingly hostile to the idea of a Trump candidacy. In December 15, I wrote I wouldn't support him as president. That decision was mine, while the bulk of writers at Red State held the same position. We're not monolith. That attitude of independence continued through the nominating process into the general election campaign and still exists today. The Hill has a piece wherein they spoke to several conservative media outlets, not Red State, regarding the supposed difficulty there is in adjusting to Donald Trump. One of the issues I have with the piece is the conflation of sites like Gateway Pundit and Breitbart with the Washington Free Beacon. The former two are not conservative media outlets as much as they are mouthpieces for Trump. The editor-in-chief of Free Beacon made an excellent point when he said conservative media has always been held to a higher standard than the liberal media. And as conservatives, we have to live up to that higher standard. When we don't, it not only undermines our work as journalists, but also the conservative project as a whole. He's right. Outlets such as Gateway Pundit and Breitbart do a disservice to the conservative media outlets because they behave more like palace guards than journalists. A lot of so-called, according to John Ziegler, a lot of so-called conservative media is acting like a dog that caught the car. Now they don't know what the hell to do. They're completely confused because they've never been in this situation before. Well, they shouldn't be confused, he writes. If they're confused, it's because they value access and traffic more than they should value, above all else, the truth. It's not a challenging endeavor for any journalist, whether they're a reporter or an opinion writer. However, people struggle with it anyway. And that, above all else, does a disservice to conservative media in the same way it does to the mainstream media. How can conservatives and media point fingers if they're prone to engaging in exactly the same behavior they decry? There's a tendency, based on the loathing of the mainstream media and Democrats for conservative outlets, to enter into a knee-jerk defense of Donald Trump. There's a difference between hypocrisy and dishonesty. The media attempt to turn the dismissal by Trump of 46 Obama-era U.S. attorneys into a scandal was an exercise in hackery. It was a moment of ordinary becoming extraordinary. The scandal died a quick death with good reason because it was nonsense. But that differs from hypocrisy. There is no confusion. Favor the truth over access and traffic. Amen. Back in a minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I'm just reading the craziest story I think I've ever read. This is crazy. Just listen to this headline. A new plan to hang a wandering skyscraper from an asteroid orbiting Earth is unveiled. 2021, NASA, for some reason, is like, hey, can we retrieve an asteroid? Can we put an asteroid in? Let's put an asteroid in orbit. Hey, let's not. Let's not have any giant rocks hanging out. Mm-hmm. Let's just let them go by. Mm-hmm. What do you say? You want to put it in orbit of Venus? Try that first. Not of Earth. I remember something about dinosaurs and an asteroid, but that's a different story. Let's leave the frickin' asteroid alone.
Or more recently, Bruce Willis's historic...
That was not a documentary. So the asteroid in 2021, now they're saying Dubai has a history of building these great skyscrapers. They want to build one in reverse. And it will be, I don't even know how many stories...
A lot. It's going to be a giant skyscraper giant. In space.
It goes from space to just above the cities. Okay. So it'll, and it will make a giant figure eight pattern every day. And it will be like from New York down to Brazil and back. So you look out your window and you're seeing, oh, look, there's Brazil. And the lower decks are all, decks where you can look at things or have dinner or things like that. So you're sitting by the windows because you're going to be very close to the cities. You'll just be over the cities.
Okay. I mean, there's certain things we can talk about and worry about and consider. That is not a real possibility.
I mean, they were considering that in a documentary with Bruce Willis.
That's not a real thing.
What they wanted to do then again, was destroy
that
was
sad, but it's not a real. That's not a real thing. Now I've just lost it. Shoot, I just lost the story. I wanted to show you the picture. I'm telling you, I don't even know what.
That's weird.
Crazy. Everything that's going on is just crazy.
Well, I mean, we're in a period where now Tesla is more valuable than Ford.
Right.
Tesla
makes sense to me.
More valuable than Ford.
Makes total sense to me.
Well,
part
do,
of that seems surprising to you.
Well, Ford sells 30 times the amount of cars.
Right.
That would be number one. You know, 30 times the amount of cars you'd think potentially.
Which one do you think has the potential of really being huge in the future?
Well, you know, Tesla obviously has that done, and they do a great job with what they do. The article goes on to talk about how. And this is, by the way, market cap, stock market.
Yeah.
It goes on to talk about how really Tesla's much more than a car company.
They're
doing
battery
so
company.
Many different things. Mm-hmm. And so many, you know, as we've talked with Elon Musk, we spent some time on that today. A lot of things that are really visionary. And the good thing about Elon Musk, if you like what he does, is he doesn't mind blowing a bunch of his money. Like, I mean, I'm sure he minds it, but he doesn't mind risking it on something that probably will never come to fruition. And he, that
like
ability.
What is he wasting where it probably will never come to fruition? Give me an example.
Well, I mean, never
the
is probably
trip to
the
Mars.
Oh, that's going to come to fruition.
It probably won't.
Yeah, it will.
Not in his lifetime.
Yeah, it will.
No.
2025.
I don't believe that.
I do. We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
I'm just saying.
Why don't you guys fight it out?
I'll shiv you so fast.
Let me rephrase.
You have a
so we,
shiv. Yeah.
Let me one in the cafeteria.
Let me rephrase so we don't avoid the "oh yeah, I'll be right in 2025" arguments. Okay. The point is, he's willing to take incredible risks that most businessmen won't take on bets on the future that might be low percentage of immediate return.
For
however,
instance,
let me give you another one. Hyperloop won't happen. Too expensive.
That one may not happen. One may not happen. But
he's interested in
technology. Won't happen.
But what technology? That one might. What technology comes out of that? That he gets rich on
bank
the Hyperloop.
Tubes. Bank tubes come out of that.
No, I don't.
It's already happened.
No, I don't. I don't think it's bank tubes.
We don't know. Right.
Yeah, we don't know. There's going to be something.
Know.
You know, his rocket ship to, you know, SpaceX and all of that stuff. Yeah. Remember what, you know, the Apollo project. Yeah, we went to the moon and that was really, really cool. But we also got microwaves out of that, microwave
GPS.
Repeaters. We got
Tang.
GPS.
Cell phone technology.
Tang, yeah.
Yeah, Tang's the big one.
It's an incredibly inefficient way of making Tang. However,
yes,
they did get Tang out of it. Yes.
Right.
Actually, I've read that that's not actually
I don't think
true.
It's true. It's I don't think it
true.
Is either.
No,
but it sounds
Tang
good.
Didn't come from NASA.
No, but we got a lot from
it was
a lot from the space program.
The upside down writing ballpoint pen?
Yeah, the Fisher
right.
pen.
NASA?
Yes.
Again,
thank you.
You know, that's most people would just try to make the pen. If you want
just
the pen.
Saying.
Right. No, you're right. There are other things that come from these technologies, and that's part of the calculus that goes into these investments.
Yeah.
But he's obviously like, if I'm worth $25 billion one day, the Hyperloop doesn't work and I'm worth 24, I'm okay with that. He's obviously making
right.
those sorts of calculations.
Right. I love
and
that.
Because he's a guy who also believes, you know, he's a big environmentalist guy, he's been able to advance environmentalism. And battery technology and all these things
far beyond
what other people were able to do.
Because instead of everybody else puts money into buying a bunch of people in Washington to go politic to get, you know, green stuff done. I like the fact that he's putting his money into I'm going to create the battery, which will create the car that will get rid of carbon fuels with the exception of I have to plug it in. And the power plant is burning a whole bunch of coal, so
that's the next
really
problem. I mean, part of that is what he's doing with the batteries you're putting in your garage and storing theoretically solar energy throughout the day when it's
correct.
Light outside, and then you can power your house at night. There's a lot of things here.
If he just changes the battery, if that's all that Tesla ever does is change the battery, and he's the winner on that, he is. He'll never have to worry about anything else ever again.
I think he's probably already there, but...
And on the same front...
Well, if you could live on $24 billion.
Don't think I have it in here or not, if I put it
I'd
in
like
the prep
to try.
But now Amazon, as a company, is bigger than Walmart, Target, and CVS, and two of the other top stores combined.
I believe that.
Combined!
We buy everything from them.
I do, at least.
I do.
It's the biggest it's the buy, biggest line item in my budget.
I buy books, movies, a lot of products from those other videos, companies, toothpaste, furniture, you name it. I can buy anything from them, and I do. We buy everything from Amazon.
It's incredible. And, you know, now we have this...
They are the Sears Roebuck of 1890 or 1900. They are the Sears catalog of today. And Sears used to have everything.
And that's what you do. I mean, you just buy the things. Like, you know, we have here in Dallas, and a lot of cities have this, if you don't live near one, the Amazon Prime Now, where, like, you order something, and it's about an hour, it's at your house.
Yeah.
You know, that is, I mean, that was not thought to be possible. Not that it wasn't thought to be possible, but wasn't thought to be probable very recently. Like, well, that's space age stuff.
That's why when Pat says these things aren't going to happen, I don't know what's going to happen, what's not going to happen, but don't dismiss these things. I mean, really,
yeah.
All of these things were crazy. We spent yesterday, about an hour in my office just talking about artificial intelligence and going over the specs of artificial intelligence. You know, 4 or 5 years ago when I was talking on the air, remember we bought our first 3D printer and I said, look, you're going to be able to print anything. Nobody believed it until a year later, we printed a gun, a working gun. And there was like, oh, crap, I guess you can.
What am I resisting?
Yeah, that's,
I don't know. I'm not sure.
That was a year. Now we're talking about crazy, crazy things. Mm-hmm. Yesterday we talked about the contact lenses that, you know, you're going to be able to, just by blinking, you'll be able to zoom in. So people with macular degeneration or macular dystrophy, they're going to be able to just put a contact lens in. And if I'm having a hard time and I need to zoom in on something, I just blink and it will zoom in. Blink again and it zooms out. Another one is
macular degeneration. That's what I'd be using it for.
Or you can use it as a creepy spy technology.
They said in five years, you're going to be able to have things like night vision. I mean, night vision, mm-hmm. You don't buy night vision goggles now. You can't buy night vision goggles. That's military grade stuff.
You can buy it, can't you?
I don't think you can buy, at least maybe there's a military grade. You can't buy the military grade. You can't buy real night vision.
I mean, I'm seeing them.
I don't.
There's some basic stuff that's on the cheaper side, but there's one here for $20,000. That's got to be pretty good.
What's it say? Yeah, it probably is. Then.
I mean,
you know. I don't think you used to be able. Like the guys go over, the guys who go over in Iraq. You're not buying what the military is selling because we don't sell it because. We can paint our soldier. For instance, you can go and put a target on people, and it stays on people. And you're painting them, and you can't see it unless you're wearing night vision goggles.
I'm sure what they have is much better than what you can purchase, you know, on the open market. But I know that there are restrictions, even on the stuff that's commercial grade, to bring it over to other countries and give to. Even allies, because they're worried about that technology spreading and things. So I mean, and that's stuff we've all heard of and seen.
Yeah, wait.
I mean, God only knows
5 years.
They have, man. Why imagine what they actually have that we don't know about yet already?
No,
he doesn't want to think about it. Okay.
So here you go, Stu. Really, right. I don't want to. What the government has, I'm excited about stuff Silicon Valley comes up with. I am not excited about what the government has.
No, I know. I'm not. I didn't say I was excited about it. I said I didn't mean imagine in this wonderful John Lennon way. I meant in like a terrifying way.
No.
Okay.
I'm going to.
Stu, you were right. I've. Stand correct. I didn't think you were right. As of the first of the year, Walmart, Target, Best Buy, Macy's, Kohl's, Nordstrom's, JCPenney, and Sears, $297.8 billion.
Combined?
Amazon, $355.9 billion.
I mean, that's not the same combination of places that I heard, but I mean, that's incredible.
That's incredible.
Walmart, how many times do you, like, if someone was to say to you, Walmart,
now, Walmart
is the
biggest in, yeah, the, in,
yeah,
the.
But if someone were to say to you, Walmart is the biggest company in the world or the third biggest company in the world, that totally feels normal to me.
Sure does.
Right? Like, and that was fairly recently. And I know Apple and Exxon were up there for a while, like, you know, mm-hmm, getting a little bit bigger. Man, that's, I know it's the biggest, still one of the biggest employers in the world, but yeah, Amazon is also becoming one of the biggest employers in the world. And
stunning.
You know, it is really incredible how fast that happens and how much I depend on that stupid website that used to just sell me books. That stupid book website is basically approximately 70% of my expenditures. Everything. Every time I think of something that I need, I'm like, let me just get it on Amazon and send it to the house.
So let's look at something. Look how much things are changing. Look what's on the horizon. Look how Amazon has changed just in the last 5 years. Okay? It was a books. It put booksellers out, and you're like, wow, Amazon, booksellers. It's going to put everybody out. Okay? So look how much that's changed. And then let me give you this story. Outrage has grown at Walter Reed Middle School in North Hollywood as school faces layoffs and increased class sizes due to a law limiting funds for schools with higher white student body. The Los Angeles Unified School District provides funding for schools where the white population is below 30%. In a letter to parents, the district noted the highly regarded middle school had been above the percentage for the last couple of years.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So they got to cut the funding.
Why don't they just round up some of the white kids and put them in a concentration camp somewhere?
Instead of the school?
Well,
you know, and you maybe have a teacher at the concentration camp, but at least those white kids are away from society.
Oh, I hope
you don't
so
want
Thank
them
you.
In polite society.
Oh, man.
Bunch of white kids?
I mean, think
oh
of
my gosh.
So what
you can't
I'm saying
fund
is,
that?
Look at the juxtaposition.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's crazy. We are so far ahead.
It's unbelievable.
In everything. And yet we're acting like Neanderthals,
yeah,
when it comes to race and social construction.
I mean, there's too many white people.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, there's way too
clearly
many
it's too many white people.
Way too many white people.
Man, I'm so
I hate white
sick
people.
Of white people.
Oh, me too. You too.
Yeah.
I'm sick
of so much privilege.
Guys, you guys
so
are
much privilege.
I don't know if you guys
handed to
know
them.
That you're
white
people.
You're all white people.
You're all white.
They're always doing like all that pumpkin stuff around October.
Right?
It's all them.
Right?
It's all them. It's all the white
pumpkin spice.
Yeah, pumpkin spice. Shut up with your pumpkin stuff.
White people.
Oh God, these white people
suck.
Well, now that you brought that up, I mean, they are Yankee candles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
See.
Mm-hmm. So, but let me just white point out again that you guys, including me, we're all white.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Does this piss anybody else off?
What?
These stories. I've seen this twice now. Americans paid a record of $540,701,000,000 in property taxes to state and local governments in fiscal 2016.
I paid over half of that myself.
Right. You know, it
that
really,
I actually
this,
believe.
This is not good. This is not good. This is not something
not
we should
good.
Be celebrating.
Right.
Because what city is functioning? Which one's living within this means?
None of them.
None.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.